we get things underway by welcoming to the program our friend Sean Lash of the Amira Astronomy Center at the University of Maine. Sean, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How you doing?
Doing very well, thanks. How are you?
Oh, hanging in there, given all the fun that we're experiencing.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, we were comparing notes on pets and their reaction to having us home all the time.
Yeah, definitely. I think the dogs are extremely happy, and I think folks who have cats might be finding that the cats are saying, hey, when are you going to go back to work?
Absolutely. Well, of course, the Astronomy Center still closed for the time being, but in the meantime, there's a lot going on up there in the skies, and we want to talk about a few items of note and of interest, and one is the discovery of the closest black hole that's ever been found near Earth, relatively speaking. Close, we're talking about 1,000 light years away, is that right?
Yeah, that is correct. There was a new black hole that was discovered by a team of astronomers, from the European Southern Observatory, and using a telescope down in La Silla in Chile. And basically, they discovered this black hole system, which is about 1,000 light years away from Earth. And it's orbiting in part of a triple star system called HR 6819. I know it's not a really romantic name per se, but it is one of the catalog stars. But basically, they were looking at double star systems, and they discovered that the innermost of this double star system was orbiting an invisible object. And so it turns out that object has the mass making it strong enough to be a black hole. And basically, the two stars orbit each other in about 40 days or so. And so this is the first black hole that is detected that close to Earth. Now, 1,000 light years is still a long, long ways away, but it is close in terms of, galactic space, if you will.
How do scientists determine the relative size of black holes?
So with black holes, basically what we're looking at is we're looking for mass. And if an object is orbiting another object, you can use Einstein's gravitational equation to determine how those things are moving around and get the mass. If you have the mass of the way they orbit each other will give you the mass of both objects. And so they can visually observe this one star orbiting another, and then they can determine that there's an invisible mass there, if you will, that is this black hole.
That is fascinating. Also, speaking of looking out into space, a lot of what we know and have learned in recent years wouldn't be possible without the Hubble telescope, and it's the 30th anniversary of Hubble. Where did that time go?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I remember a long time ago watching this telescope being launched aboard, back aboard the space shuttle, and it was launched on April 24th of 1990, and so far it has made more than 1.4 million observations of roughly close to 50,000 different objects over its 30-year life cycle. It's pretty amazing that, we've just had its 30th birthday, and it revealed this really beautiful image called the Cosmic Reef, which shows basically this incredible nebula within one of the Magellanic Clouds, and the way that young stars inside are sort of sculpting out this area, which is a very incredible image. And of course, Hubble has had so many images over the 30 years, but when the telescope was first launched, the mirror wasn't quite perfect. They had discovered a flaw. That being said, though, even when it was launched, it could see much better than anything we had on the ground at the time. And so there were a number of servicing missions that went up, the first one to correct those optics, and then future ones to update the instrumentation and things of that nature. And so the telescope has given us really unprecedented views from Shoemaker-Levy 9 and the impact on Jupiter, which is the first time we actually saw, a comet being ripped apart and particles hitting another planet, to, the Hubble Deep Field image showing that really every patch of the sky, there are literally, you know, thousands of galaxies in to, you know, like the pillars of creation. And its most recent image of this cosmic reef with nebulas, and really getting a good idea of how stars work. So it's truly revolutionized the way we see the universe.
And I believe still on schedule for next March, the launch of the James Webb Space Telescope. And how much more will that allow us to see?
Yeah, so Webb is, of course, sort of viewed as the next step, if you will, because Hubble will not last forever, and it probably won't be safe. You know, we currently don't have a vehicle to go up and service it like we used to. Webb is going to be a telescope that basically will have it'll be roughly three times the size in terms of the mirror on board that. Now, it will do most of its observations in infrared, and it's going to be located at a Lagrange point, sort of out between Earth and the Moon, so much farther away. So it won't be serviceable like Hubble was. So once we launch it, we have to hope that everything works exactly as planned. And most of the time they do. That's, you know, because they spend a lot of time planning on these things and working on them, to get it going. But all of its observations will be made in infrared, and it's supposed to really give us a good look at the young universe, pushing back a little bit farther than Hubble could, and really getting an idea of how the first galaxies and first stars formed.
Tomorrow, by the way, is the 47th anniversary, not a nice round number, but 47th anniversary of the launch of Skylab. And I feel like Skylab gets overlooked in the history of space exploration. What are some of the things that we were able to learn and use from the Skylab missions?
Well, Skylab really was our first sort of space station, if you will. It was the first time that we had people staying up for long periods of time. And, so it was very important in the day to really give us an idea of how the human body would be affected by long-term space missions. And, yeah, it was sort of, like I say, that's sort of the first precursor to, the space station. And, that mission, too, again, I remember as a child, I was so hopeful that a piece would land in my backyard when we heard it falling back down to Earth. However, of course, if it had, I'm sure that the U.S. government would have come and picked it up, because they were, definitely were trying to make sure they got as much of it back as they could back at the time. But it was sort of that, that first foray into long-term space travel.
Here in the month of May and into early June, what are the planets that we're able to see clearly?
Yeah, right now we have some really wonderful planets in our sky. So if you're an early morning riser, this morning it was really beautiful. Before sunrise, you have Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, and this morning joined by the Moon. And in fact, Friday morning, the Moon is going to be right near Mars in the early morning sky. Yesterday morning, when it was cloudy, it was right in between Jupiter and Saturn, which made a really nice view. No smiley face like there was published a while back. There was a couple things on the on the web saying that it was going to be a smiley face, but that was not the case. They were putting Jupiter and Venus in the wrong places in the sky. But like I say, right now, those three in the morning. And then Venus is visible in our evening sky, and a little bit later this month, towards the 20th or so, Mercury is going to be joining it in that area of the sky. So the elusive planet, which is a little bit tougher to see, you'll be able to spot there. And we also have some comets right now.
Right.
Comet Swan we're going to start to see that sort of over the next week or so. It's going to start to become visible in the early morning skies, low in the horizon. But this is a comet that has a pretty decent tail. It's been observed in the southern hemisphere for a while now, the last couple weeks, and it's going to be getting very bright. We're hoping it'll be a really beautiful sight coming up in the next few weeks.
That is wonderful. And as always, Astronomy Center with some wonderful online resources. You directed me to some great resources for youngsters as well, if people are looking for things to do to keep those kids busy around the house.
Yeah, we on our website, astro.umaine.edu, we have a section there that is online resources right on that homepage that has activities for, adults and for kids of all ages. Our Facebook page, we have been posting stuff weekly. We have a couple different activities this week on some rocketry stuff for kids to do. And then on Fridays, we always post, Friday evenings, we always post some content sort of to take the place of our public shows. We normally have a flat screen version of one of the planetarium shows, not quite the same, but at least something. I also have been working on online and posting once a week these online sky lectures, which will show you what's up in the night sky. And then we always have a musical offering to kind of take the place of our music show. So trying to do, you know, a few things online every week to keep folks engaged. And I've also said if there are teachers out there who are interested, they can feel free to contact me. I can point them ways, and I may be able to do some online presentations for them if they're interested as well.
That's terrific. Sean, we appreciate it. As always, thanks for checking in with us. Be well, stay safe. Give the dogs our best, and we'll check in with you again next month.
Sounds great. You guys take care.
Thank you, Sean. Sean Lash from AmeriAstronomy Center.